Okay, so I just want to say that since we made the time to have Kit and Dominic as guests today, Dominic's travel plans were changed, and so he is in transit or in a place where he might in the end not be able to get to the phone. We will not know until we know. But for now, I would like to get started in the way that we usually start, which is I would love to hear from one or two people anything about what you have tried to put in practice since our last time together, what you succeeded in doing, what was difficult, any comments that you have, questions, any of those things from our work in previous weeks.
Hi, Nikki. I have a story to tell. I'm on the planning committee for the Family Heart Camp, and we are overbooked to 105. And then I got the email. There was an individual who was surprised that they had not been included on the volunteer email list because they had been certain that they had volunteered and they were on the list of volunteers and they were part of camp this year and what happened. And my first reaction as host and part of this planning committee in going to 106, that's crazy. But what happened was another person was copied on the email who was also on this call. And she put a couple of words right in the bottom of the email that said, "Do you think you could be open to continued dialogue on this?" And it probably took me a couple of hours, but I thought, that's a core commitment. Am I really committed? And we did it. I shared my truth with this individual that said, this was my understanding and this is what happened from my perspective. And I shared my fear that she would be mad at me. And she responded with, "Oh, I'm definitely not mad at you, and I want to create ease, but I'd still really love to come to camp." And I shared some additional fears back, and I'm not really 100% sure it's going to work out, but wow, it was pretty amazing to choose to open to the space. That's the detail of the week, of somebody supporting and just saying, ahem, do you remember those core commitments?
That is awesome, because it's like you're doing two things at once in telling this story. One is you're talking about the power of the commitment, and once you took it on, what it was able to create. And the other is you're talking about the power of support. So I'm really appreciating this. Thank you for this sharing. And I just want to say it kind of like illustrates very clearly why it is that we need support. Because when we are in a situation and we go into our habitual contracted places, there is literally less of us available to reflect on the situation and choose how we want to respond. Someone who is one step removed and cares about us can see the possibility that we don't see. Thank you.
Hello?
Yes.
I had just wanted to talk a little bit about, more in generalities, I've been working on the commitment to self-care because that is a really difficult space for me. And what I'm noticing is that it's dovetailing a lot with my commitment to risking my significance, because what I'm finding is that part of my failure to practice self-care comes from my unwillingness to put myself out there and say, you know what, I know this is what you want from me right now, but this is what I need right now. Mm-hmm. I need sleep, I need rest, I need quiet time, I need whatever it is that I need. You know, I'm afraid to speak up for myself in that way, and so I'm finding that those two commitments for me are almost kind of one and the same.
And you did it and it worked.
I'm working on it.
What support do you need?
I think I have support. I think I just need to be willing to do it, you know, and I think that part of it is that when we change a pattern of behavior, I think it's hard for the people around us to, it takes a little bit of time for them then to change, you know, so I've made this commitment that I'm going to speak up more for my need for self-care. So when I do that, you know, the people I live with, the people in my life, then don't expect that from me. So I think there's a little bit of a dance that goes on there while they're adjusting to my adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's kind of where I am right now.
Okay. Thank you.
I had this small dilemma with, I had a concert with my son that he wanted me to be at. And then after that, I had the NBC meeting, an introduction that we were doing. I was not very much involved, but they expected me to be there. And normally I would have pondered the situation, come up with a solution, which was to arrive at this meeting like half an hour later because I'd go to the concert. So I started toying with this idea of letting people in. So I wrote to them on this Facebook group that we have, you know, I have this dilemma. You know, I could skip the concert and be at the meeting on time or go to the concert and be late.
Mm-hmm.
And since you're affected, I thought I'd just let you be able to influence my decision. So this was a really small thing to do, but I had a lot of fun doing it. So I really once more enjoy this thing, small steps. This was a comfortable thing for me to do, so why not start there? And I was just happy that the idea came to me.
Yes.
And then an unexpected joy I had of this was that people answered as I would have expected them to. They said, well, go to the concert, you know, your son is important, something like that. It wasn't anything unexpected, but the unexpected thing was that what a relief it was for me to have this out in the open. In one way, it was so small. It was like, oh, no big deal. On the other hand, it was like, wow, did I do that?
Yes, I think that the microscopic steps really show us the possibilities. So they are kind of like holographic. Do you know what I mean by that?
Yeah, I agree. And one thing more than struck me was this idea of nonviolence being like the nature of who we are. I kind of got this impression. I mean, I've learned about this commitment. It's not that like I know the whole list. It wasn't like I was looking for it. It just showed up and seemed like the most natural thing to me, even if it was not habitual.
Yes.
And that's so cool.
Yes, that is. I've often used the term acquired spontaneity. I'm very grateful to someone who is kind of like a very unusual body worker that I see regularly, and he really questions the whole term of natural, the whole idea of natural, of anything being natural. And he makes a distinction between spontaneous and deliberate, which I really appreciate. That even rather than calling something habitual, calling it spontaneous, we recognize it's what arises without necessarily being, you know, reflective about it. And what I'm hearing you celebrate is that what came spontaneously was how you really wanted to be, like an integration happened. That's why I'm saying acquired spontaneity. Am I catching the flavor?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, very much so. Thank you.
Thank you.
I was intrigued by the thing that you said last time, that nonviolence is not hiding. That kind of connected to risking my significance that I've been experimenting with. The challenge that I had with that is if I'm collaborating with somebody, and this ties in with interdependence, if it is not going the way I want it to go, and then I collaborate with somebody else who is connected with this first person that I collaborated once before in the same organization, same kind of a project, how do I maintain the non-hiding and yet the privacy in my steps and visions and strategies?
I don't know what you mean by privacy here.
Privacy meaning what has happened in the previous collaboration is that if I thought of some idea and a strategy, this other person just ran with it without holding the bigger picture in place or without holding my contributions.
You know, what I'm reminded of is not exactly a response. I remember once a colleague of mine had the trunk of her car broken into and a whole collection of NVC materials that she had were stolen, Marshall books and puppets and different things like this. And ultimately where we landed was we don't know where they are, and certainly we would want the sustainability that would come from getting money for those materials.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow somebody took them, and therefore somebody will use them.
Mm-hmm.
There was something very sweet about that. And the connection is your ideas were actually being implemented.
Yes.
So it is.
But prematurely.
Yes, maybe prematurely. But in some way, your mm-hmm. contribution was being made. So there is something about a certain kind of openness. I'm thinking of celebration of life being the commitment that might help you in that situation. To truly celebrate, as uncomfortable as that situation was, that your contribution in some ways was made, and let it not color in any way your current relationship. This is one of the things that I really, really try to do. Allow myself to be burned again and again by trusting. So that I don't bring to a new situation the disappointment from another situation. And I can still trust the new person freshly.
This is good. What you're saying so far is helpful. Celebration of life part is helpful. Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'm really enjoying it. It's a sense of having sown some seeds over several weeks and watered them, and that now it is a place where there's some beginning harvest, which I'm really enjoying hearing from several people that are, you are finding ways to actually integrate and put into effect and see benefit from using the commitment. What I would like to do right now is to put you in small groups to begin the process of talking about asking for, receiving, and offering support. There's three
okay.
areas of challenge. There's asking for the support when we need it, or as someone in a group that I was once part of asked many, many, many years ago, asking for the support before we really need it. And there is receiving support when it's offered, mm-hmm. and there's offering support when it's not asked for. It's three things that I believe we need to get better at in order to be able to create networks of support that are resilient, robust, and flexible enough to handle the transformation that we are seeking to create within and without. Okay, so let's do the groups for 15 minutes, and let's have the option, if people want it, for each person to get 5 minutes. Or you can do whatever else you might want to do in your group. You can answer the questions that were in the handout, or you can look at the focus that I spoke about, or anything else related to support that would be important for you to look at. Hello, and welcome back. And at this point, I would like to open it up to hearing from people what you figured out about asking for, receiving, or offering support, and see if we can take any of these conversations a little deeper. Anyone willing to share?
Yeah, I found it curious. In our group, when we're protecting ourselves, we're hiding in our story or not wanting to put ourselves out there. That's a form of self-care. And then when we do open up to being vulnerable and risking putting ourselves out there, that invites, I'm imagining, because it invites for me to be tender then with the person that's vulnerable.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And there is that, when we reach that vulnerable place, instead of being in that defensive, woe is me, whatever hiding place we're in, when we truly are authentically vulnerable, there is that invitation to be tender and inviting to the other person. And I just found that fascinating.
Yes, thank you. I'm glad you felt that, because it's a game changer insight.
And it's not deliberate. It goes back to that spontaneity. There's that effortlessness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you.
I would say that piece of the tenderness that I can have with myself, putting myself out there, and there was a belief that I'm alone.
This experience of being all alone is something we are not born with. It's something that we acquire from how life unfolds in the modern world in particular. Especially in our generation, I think it's starting to change. In younger generations, we were separated at birth from the tactile necessity of contact in order to thrive. It's not a small thing. Many of us were placed in rooms by ourselves. The message that I'm alone is a literal message in the way that I see it that is not born of the specific circumstances that we are in right now. It's born from earlier circumstances. And because it belongs to the past and not to the present, it requires intentionality in counteracting it. Because first there is the I'm alone, and second there is I shouldn't expect anything from anyone because I should be self-sufficient. You put this on top of each other, and it's a recipe for not asking for help. Thank you.
So I was thinking specifically about asking for support for maintaining these commitments. And when I thought about it, I was kind of stumped. And I realized that the reason I'm stumped is that I don't, in general, do that. I mean, I do ask for support for other things that are more tangible. But when I think about the commitments and anything that's along the lines of my own growth of consciousness, it feels like a very internal process that I hold and maintain and cultivate on my own. And I think that my experience with tentatively reaching out and trying to get support for that has often turned into me listening to other people and then me supporting them, not getting help for where I'm at and where I want to develop. And that's changed since I've been more involved in NBC, changed a lot, but I think that's still there.
Yes, I think that that has two parts to it. One of it, my guess, is when I'm hearing you say tentatively, I think that's part of the issue. Because if it's tentative, it's harder for people to come towards you in response. And it's related to something else. There is a way that I believe that, you know, a few years ago I was attempting to be in a relationship with someone, attempt that did not succeed, but I learned something from it that was useful, which is that there is a kind of receiving support that gives us something similar to the experience of unconditional care that we wanted way early on in life, which is someone being able to hold it all and offer us exactly the support that would be perfect for us. That is rare and precious. It's a gift from life when it happens, and it is not something we can count on. And then there's a different kind of support, which is me holding the process of asking for the support in exactly the way that I need it, telling the other person exactly what I need from them, guiding them and coaching them when they don't give me the support in the way that I want it. And therefore, continuing to hold responsibility even as I received support. This is something that we can all grow in being able to do. Am I making sense?
Yeah, you're talking about being a grown-up.
Oh, shit, that again. Yeah, there is something about being a grown-up while asking for support.
I get it.
Okay. I want to say there are two more people with their hands up. Hang on to it because Kit is with us, and I want to take the opportunity to chat with her, and we are hoping that Dominic will join us any minute, and he may or may not, but at least I want to engage with Kit for a few minutes and then give you all the opportunity to ask Kit or possibly Kit and Dominic questions. So, hi, Kit.
Hello.
So, I just want to be transparent here that we decided to just engage in the flow without preparing anything ahead of time. So I think what I want to do is I want to tell you a little bit about the questions related to support that have come up that I have framed so far and see what you have to say about them and possibly other things about the whole image of relying on community for support, creating community for support. And the questions are, you know, the challenges that we have about asking for support, receiving it, and offering it, that all of those kind of like go against the ethos that we were raised in this culture. And I just want to open it up to you to see what bubbles up in you around these topics. And in particular, we're talking about support for living the way that we want, not just any old support, but that kind of like strategic way of inviting each other to be our fullest, most conscious selves.
Yeah, a couple thoughts. I know that it's been, I think, 2+ years since I started organizing a lot of daily support for myself, despite being quite busy. I think at this point I have 7 different kinds of support calls that happen for me every week, and they're very tightly scheduled. And as Mickey knows, she and I talk a couple times a week. And what I have found is that actually I use those as places to prepare for and recover from difficulty of different kinds in life. And when there's no difficulty to prepare for or recover from, it's an opportunity to celebrate and, you know, strengthen my gratitude practice. So doing that has really, I feel and have noticed, really organically kind of supported my resilience in life in such a way that I really notice now if I don't have that kind of support going on, I just feel like, oh, I'm noticing the resilience dipping. So I'm very glad to have set that up. And I try to tell that in very mainstream settings because it's such an, you know, backwards way. Most people, you know, they want to be seen for being able to be super people. So it's really fun to just say, oh, I couldn't do a darn thing if I didn't have all sorts of people keeping me glued together.
And what has made it possible for you to do this since you also grew up in this culture? What made it possible for you to make that shift?
Well, I'm among friends here. So I guess, you know, one of the things that I've learned often, I've learned more from seeing what people haven't done well than I've learned from seeing what people do well. And it was a sorrow for me in my earlier days, at times especially with my work in the NVC community, to see that even though we were using these tools, that many of us still were not good at asking for support. Mm-hmm. And that I found that was actually really a problem, because if we don't ask for support, then our need for empathy sort of leaks out in all sorts of sometimes unconscious and sometimes destructive ways. And so it just felt like a leadership move. I also remember some years ago, you know, some workshop in Oakland that we did, and I think you were leading an exercise on the hidden hierarchy of needs. And there was a real realization in the room at that point that the need that everybody sort of most wanted to act like they didn't have was the need for support.
Mm-hmm.
And that felt familiar in me as well that day. And I thought, you know, if this is the need that I most want to kind of act like I don't have, then I better keep a good eye on it.
Thank you. I'm really appreciating this idea of asking for support being a leadership move, setting up support structures and advertising them, announcing to the whole world that you need support, that that's a leadership move in creating the kind of transformation that we want to see in the world.
Yeah, I've just seen so much sacrificial leadership and often seen many people quite harmed by it, including the people who are modeling this sacrificial kind of leadership. And I just decided, gosh, I want to model a different kind of leadership.
Thank you. I'd be curious to see what additional questions or thoughts people would like to bring or any other questions that they want to ask you. Now I'd like to see who wants to engage with Kip. Any questions or comments or anything that you'd like to ask her or say to her?
Hi, it's really nice to have you here, Kit, and I just want to share how helpful it was for me to hear you. What it did for me, I do ask for support, but I often have the thought, oh, well, I've got that support, I don't need more than that. And yet within me, I feel like I do need more than that. So it gave me permission to really go for it in asking for support. Yeah, I just appreciate that. I really appreciated what you shared. Thank you.
I'm celebrating hearing that because I also want to help people remember that a lot of it is an exchange of support. But also whenever we are able to kind of be true to ourselves, we give everyone else around us the permission to do the same. You know, maybe your version of being true to yourself is asking people for support, and maybe that will encourage someone else to be true to themselves in the same way or a different way. But I think the more that we can just be authentic to what supports our own humanity. And I also think that, you know, there may be some things that we as a species right now need to give birth to in a new way to kind of save ourselves, honestly. So I think whatever we need to do to make the space for the new things in us that need to come through I think we need to do it. And support for me is a big strategy for that possibility.
Yes, and I appreciate what you just said because I think that's kind of intuitively where I'm coming from. Really wanting to birth a part of myself that's really who I am and that's going to be contributing in this world and getting support for that. Thank you, Kit.
I'm glad. I just want to say, you know, I was at lunch with a friend today and, you know, I was talking about, I think that part of the tragedy of like sort of living in a Christian culture is this whole thing with love your neighbor as yourself. Well, we do love our neighbors as ourselves. We hate ourselves and we hate our neighbors.
Thank you. I wanted to just say that there is in our midst a midwife who speaks about exactly what you said, Kit, this sense of being at a time in life when we are collectively giving birth to something. Okay.
I'm wondering, it sounds like you chose people that you trust will be able to support you in the way you need.
Yep.
And I don't know if they were already available by the time you decided to set up this circle of support, or was there a period of time where you were wanting to ask for support and not sure that the quality of support you were wanting was actually available from the people that you had access to, and how you worked with that, if that happened for you?
Well, two thoughts, too. One was that I am blessed, actually, with a surplus of people in my life who have... So I'm always actually sort of figuring out, like, gee, why can't I put this person on my itinerary? And I like it also because it helps me to stay closely connected to people around the world who I love. It's kind of... I have this really big thing about time management from permaculture called stacking function, which is trying to make everything I do meet several different kind of needs, kind of NVC-ish in that way. I have empathy buddies. My furthest away one is now in Auckland, New Zealand. So I talk to her Thursdays, and it's her Friday morning, and otherwise we just wouldn't ever go. We can go months never talking to each other, and now it's a sweet connection. So I use it in part because there's people I just adore, and I just, you know, can go years sometimes without seeing them. So I don't have that problem, but I want to say that I do have one exchange where I honestly, it's not like super high quality support, but for other reasons I do it. And I'm not talking about you, Mickey, don't worry. And
I knew you were, but anyway.
Yeah. You know, for me, actually just setting it up, that in and of itself is a good thing because I'm building my trust in my own capacity to care for myself. So even if it's a 30-minute call and 15-minute exchange, you know, loose, no police on that time, you know, agenda stuff, that just doing that, just making the space for the intention for support is still as nourishing, even if it's not, you know, the exact flavor of, you know, that I like. It still creates, I just build my trust in my capacity not to abandon myself anymore.
And I'm hearing that you've built a discernible structure. And I know that sometimes it seems that I need to find the setup ahead of time. I have to create, I'm in the process of creating more structures that are available. I mean, it sounds like in your life you don't actually need to do that in the moment where I am, find some support, because you have enough and your life is filled.
It's not filled, but there is a lot of it. But what I want to say, too, is that for me, I have to set it up because there are days when I can, like, still barely keep myself glued together because of world despair and other things. And those are the days when the phone weighs 500 pounds. So I almost need the structure to be there to hold me up on the days when I would never ask for support. So that's why, for me, having the structure set up has been so useful, because when I most need support is when it's hardest for me to ask for it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I was enjoying all that you said, Kit, and especially that last piece, because I find it, for me, like, it's hard to ask for support, so it's great when it's kind of set in the day and it's going to happen. I don't have it set every day, yet when, like, in the moment when I need it and it's not necessarily available, knowing that it's going to happen tomorrow, let's say, then already it creates a little space. So just knowing it's going to happen is already supporting.
Yeah, because you just know it's coming. And I think just even creating those structures, again, it just undo those really, you know, those kind of some of our most destructive habits where we just don't have our own back. And that we know that, you know, twice a week, I make sure that I get that. You know, even if it's Thursday and the next call isn't until Monday, it still sustains you. And I also want to say that for me, phone calls aren't the only strategy for support. During one of the worst times of my life, I carried around a little piece of paper in my pocket for identifying the four or five things that most made me be willing to be alive on days I didn't want to be. When my willingness to sort of stay here got really bad, I would pull out that little piece of paper and just stare at it and go find one of those things and go get next to it for a while until I felt myself come back to life. That was a strategy for an extremely difficult time, and it didn't involve other people. It involved me just remembering that I didn't want to choose not to be here. And I suspect that, like all of us, maybe have a little list of things that help us to be glad to be alive, even on our worst days. And it's good to know what those things are. I'll tell you, my things are flowers of any kind. So in the middle of the miserable long winters here, I sometimes drive to the most expensive florist in the city and just stand there. People at the beginning or the end of their lives, because they're not so stupid as us in the middle who are so self-obsessed with all sorts of things. And there's other things on the list too.
Thank you. One last comment for you, Kit.
I found that listening to this idea of setting up a system of getting support and having like even small time slots to do that somehow felt a bit uncomfortable to me, and then I related to what Mickey just shared about the idea of not getting support when someone happened to come along, but rather setting up the process, asking for support, and also guiding the other person to give support in a grown-up way. So I'm thinking, okay, so maybe there are other ways to get support than I'm used to. So I'd like to ask you, Kit, when you set up this system, and did that change your perception of what getting support is, or your idea about it in any way?
Well, it formalized something that I had been doing informally for years. And as I said it when I first began to speak, I noticed that formalizing something that I had been doing informally really boosted my resilience, and I think continues to do so. So that's one thing that I learned and I'm grateful for, which I didn't know before I did it. Did that answer your question?
In a way, yes. I guess I'm just curious about other ways to look at the idea of getting support. So I guess that's one piece. Doing things informally makes a difference. That's what you're saying.
Yes. Yeah. After years of informality, setting up something formal really ended up being like hugely helpful. And like I said, I was surprised by it. And I mean, I still love the kind of on-the-fly thing. Being on the receiving end of those requests, as well as, you know, every once in a while making them too. But it's just so helpful to just lean on that structure. And again, it's not even the structure or what happens. It's the fact that I know that I care enough about myself to create it.
It's not that you get more support than you would without the structure as much as just, gee, I really did create this structure for myself.
I do get more support, and I built trust in my own capacity for caring for myself. I built trust in my own relationship with myself by making it more formal and more frequent. Because I think, you know, the person that we most need to build trust with almost always, in my experience, is ourselves. Then we look at building trust between, and then we look at building trust among people. But if we don't trust ourselves, it's kind of a rough go. So for me, like just saying I'm not going to abandon myself when things get hard anymore, I'm just not going to do that. I'm going to figure out ways to take care of myself. I'm not going to exclude myself from the care that I give everyone else.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. You get the post-final word.
It just was occurring to me as I was listening to this that back to what you were saying about asking for support being a leadership move. That was really just a striking thought. And I realized that if we can somehow encourage ourselves to set up structures for support, but also encourage those who are taking on leadership and whom we want to take on leadership to create those structures or help to create those structures and make that, you know, if that can become sort of the expected culture of things, you know, where if you're going to be taken on leadership, you have support, not just to get things done, but specific support for continuing to be the kind of person that you want to be and be the kind of leader that you want to be, then we would have probably many more people that are actually willing to step into those roles.
Yeah, because being a leader is a risky business. You know, I mean, people both love and fear leaders, and it's hard. And also when you're in a leadership role of any kind, people are working out their past pain about leaders toward you. It's not about you, and yet it is. So it's a hard role. In my view, you know, even if you don't have a role that other people assigned you as a leader, you're leading your own life. I mean, you're the leader of your own life. Who the heck can be the leader of your life if it's not you?
And some people don't. You know, a lot of people don't lead their own lives. You know, it's like living in reaction. So and I'm talking about any kind of leadership where you basically take responsibility for something, for yourself and others, for a project or something. Building that support in could make it so that it's actually not, you know, a little less scary.
And one of the things I really love about it, too, is that, you know, part of that building trust in yourself, building the support, is that you just begin to kind of bring down some of the harshness towards yourself that all of us, you know, unfortunately seem, no matter what culture, you know, people hail from, we all seem to have really taken on a pretty strong dose of harshness toward ourselves. So whatever we can do to kind of bring that, like, loving care that we would give toward our best friend and really be able to turn it on ourselves, it helps us to undo some of the stuff that's just been handed down generation after generation. I keep sharing this one quote with people from this Franciscan friar who I love named Richard Rohr. He talks about, you know, what doesn't get transformed gets transferred. You know, I think that asking for support is transformational. And if we're in a leadership role, if we're a parent, we have to work on transforming ourselves. Or, you know, we don't have to, but, you know, we just will have what we have if we don't. So we can choose.
Thank you, Kit. I don't want to end this, but I also do want to end this because I want to leave time for us to create the structures of support within this group for the next few weeks until we meet together one more time. Thank you, Kit. I'm so glad
you came. Bye, everybody. Yep, bye-bye.
So here is the opportunity in the way that we designed this course. It was deliberate and now even more poignantly real after this conversation with Kit. Couldn't have been timed better. It was deliberate that there will be several weeks for you to engage with each other without leaning on me. So it's experimenting within the container of this group to take action towards creating mutual support. So there are a variety of options that we see. One is that you can use the virtual classroom as a place to share successes, challenges, questions, different things like this, and really be present with each other about this. That's one possibility. Another possibility is you have the free conference line and you can have access to it anytime that you want. You just need to have people who are willing to take on. And we have some people who are willing to do that for the next few weeks on Fridays. If you do get on the call, what you can do is to share successes, share challenges. You can take turns presenting a commitment and having a discussion about how that commitment can help you in different situations. You can take turns offering extensive support to one person with empathy and coaching, offering them specific commitments to help them with specific situations. And I'd like to know if anybody has any other brainstorming ideas about what you could do in moving this group into being self-holding in terms of structures of support. Some of you already have empathy buddies, which is another part of it. So does anybody have anything you'd like to add?
If there was something like an emergency empathy.
Great. You can have kind of like an offers and requests things that you post in the classroom where people who are happy to be contacted for emergency empathy or coaching will write their name. And then if anybody wants to, they can look at that list and go, okay, I'll call this person or I will email this person. Thank you. Great. So we're going to have hiatus for a few weeks. I'm going to see if by any chance Dominic is available on our last date, since he wasn't able to make it today. And if he is, I will invite him to join us then. That will be our closure call. And for now, I would just like to hear from two or three people. What's something that stands out to you from what we did here today?
The one thing I wanted to say was what you said about taking responsibility to ask for the kind of support we need. And I found it particularly striking because one of the reasons why I'm not asking for support is that I don't trust that I will get the support that I need.
Thank you.
I noticed that asking for support invites collaboration. Collaboration is what we need the most, and that is in so many extraordinary ways.
Thank you.
I take with me the idea that Kit shared that resonated very much with what I was wanting to share earlier in the call, this thing of when I really need support, I won't perhaps be able to ask for it. So therefore, to have this support structure available at that time is really, really valuable.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I am really enjoying our journey, and I'm really curious to reconnect in a few weeks and see how you're holding up, because the whole idea of this was to create a foundation for the rest of your life. This is not like something you learn, check mark, I did this. This is a foundation for living life in a particular way of being on a particular path, and being able to support each other is part of what will make it sustainable. I look forward to reconnecting. Thank you so much.